All right, guys, welcome to the show. This is Deborah Gets Red Pilled. I'm not quite positive of the episode, but it's somewhere in the 160s. I think we're up to 160. Who knows? I got a bunch in the can I got to release. I've been busy, haven't put them out. I'm here with Chud and Deborah. The gang is all here. What's going on, guys?
The group is back together. not same old for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, you, mostly the same old for me. You mentioned, though, that you were running a little late because you were at work. Is that right?
Yeah, money's a little tight. So I went the contractor who put our bathroom in for us needed some help on a big job he's on. So I'm working with them this week for not very much money, but, you know. Good to get back to work. It's kind of nice. Just like framing a house. So it's stuff that I like doing and learning and getting to do cool stuff. So yeah
plus I have to assume this guy's pretty local to you. So that's good just to be, you know, part of the community and be out there, get your face and name out there.
Yeah, he's a good dude. He lives 10 minutes away from me. And so I just drive to his house in the morning and then ride with them to work. Mm-hmm. He's got like a whole bunch of his property got logged, and he has all this like old pine that's just like laying out there. So he's constantly just like goes back there with his tractor and pulls out trees for me and gives me unlimited firewood. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, so I've gotten a couple cords from him in the past couple months, which is really nice because it's fire weather right now.
Yeah. I hate to tell you this. It was 74 here today.
Oh, I don't mind. I don't mind. I mean, it's 39 and sunny here, which is fine for me for the fall.
Mm-hmm. Pretty into that. I like a cold, sunny day myself.
Yeah, I'd rather work. I'd rather go do construction work in 40 degrees and sunny than 75 and sunny.
That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I mean, we had 80 degrees through the middle of October, so I'm okay. Mm-hmm. The rain will start getting it's been really nice here for 2 weeks, but rain will come back next week, so I'm not quite sure if I'm gonna be into that, but
we'll take it as it comes, I'm sure.
Yeah, what else is going on? Thanksgiving is coming up, guys.
Yep.
And we've got a bunch of people coming up to our place. What are you guys doing? What are the Chuds up to?
I think it's just going to be us. I don't think I don't think anybody's coming over. I think it's going to be what I've always dreamed Thanksgiving should be. Me and my family having a good time.
Yeah.
But
sorry to ruin that for you guys last year.
Yeah. You really fucked it up. No. No, that was great having you there. I love having people that I get along with and all of that come to our place. But unfortunately, that category has grown somewhat narrow.
Yeah, it's few and far between.
Usually, it's always been a family thing, and me and my family, we butt heads about things that are classic Thanksgiving headbutting issues.
Of course.
And it's if anything, it's a little bit of a blessing these last couple COVID years of Thanksgiving, but it's just made it that everybody's perfectly content to stay in their own corners. And if it's just the four of us, I'm happy with that. But I think a couple other people will show up.
Cool. Yeah. We have that classic story of Charlie Robinson ruining Thanksgiving by talking about 9/11 at the Thanksgiving table.
Right. Right.
That's a good one. Yeah, I haven't seen my parents since February of 2019 is the last time I saw my parents. Yeah. So I think I'm going to go down to their place for like two nights in around Christmas time. So
are they in the Bay Area?
I live in Southern California, down by San Diego, I think.
So, okay.
I don't know. They're always like moving around to different retirement communities.
Uh-huh. Swinger communities.
I don't know. I sure hope not, but
senior swingers.
Yeah.
I think I'll start a group, senior swingers.
Senior swingers.
You're gonna start that?
Yeah, I think I should.
Do key parties?
Tasha Key in the bowl.
Whoever's key you get, you go home
Have
with.
You ever heard that the pineapple is supposed to be the sign for that?
I thought it was the welcome sign, but
What do you mean?
it's like if you have a pineapple on your front door, say, it means that you're welcome. But it has a swinger connotation also.
Yeah, I think they put pineapples up to
I
signal the
thought
others.
putting up a welcome sign meant that you were swingers.
Every doormat.
Every house.
Yeah, who knows? I'm not into swinging. I don't think I'll ever quite I don't think I'll ever embrace it, but
Yeah. It's a ridiculous lifestyle.
yeah, it's not a very grown-up thing to do.
No, it is not.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of swingers, I allowed my two separate flocks of chickens merge a little bit today for the
Yeah.
first time, which was pretty cool. We got our it's six hens and a rooster that we hatched this year that have been staying separate this whole time. And now I've been kind of alternating days of letting either the main flock or this small flock out. And today I let the small flock out, and a few minutes later I was like, nah, I think today's the day. So I opened the other one, and I got to watch some rooster fighting going on, some cock fighting going on for a little while. They had to establish the pecking order.
Yeah.
And I'll be Roy, the new boy. He took him on. He seems to be the dominant guy,
Nice.
which is I was a surprise to me. I didn't expect that.
How many do you have in all?
We have three roosters and 27 hens. So 30, an
Wow,
even
that's
30 right
nice.
now. Yeah,
Very nice.
it's an all right number. It could be a little higher. But I'm satisfied with it. I wish we'd gotten more hens out of the 20 that we hatched this year, but a lot of them were roosters. But we slaughtered all of those, and they're in our freezer. We've been making dog food out of them, making broth, and then using the meat as dog food. So it works out okay.
Let me stop that. I understand Emily and Ricky had a showdown.
Yeah, Emily's been terrified of our rooster, Ricky, because he puffs up on her every time. He hates her. He's scared of me because he tried it on me once and I kicked him. So every time she goes in there, she like I hear her like scream. She like for real screams. Makes me so mad. She what did they say when she was a baby, Deborah? She has a
She in the hospital, they told me before we even left the hospital, she cries like a cougar.
But she also has like some sort of response, like some like sort of
She had a strong startle response. Is that what you mean?
yeah, she still does. I can like make her scream so easily. And it's funny because it's like I can see it'll what it's what if she was ever in a situation with like a psycho type situation where someone opened the shower, I know what she would do. She would just stand there and scream. But yeah, so she like goes in there, she screams and runs away and gets all upset and then thinks that homesteading's not for her. And then like yesterday I went to work and she had the day off, so she had to do all the animal chores. So that includes like going in there and giving them their fermented feed. And she went in there and she like nutted up on him, and actually she like said she used the lid from the metal garbage can that we keep their chicken feed in as like a shield.
Shield,
Yeah, and she said she fought him and won, and now he's scared of her, so she felt pretty good about herself.
it's all about that pecking order.
Yeah,
Yep. She
She needed
regained her power.
exactly.
Yeah, it was crazy though. Like I'd see it, like anytime he came, she got close to him, he would like go to, even when she was on the other side of the fence, he'd like go and he'd like have his shoulders back, like all like puffed up, threatening towards her. It's pretty funny. But yeah, I'm proud of her. She did a good job, and yeah. So that's good. And yeah, the pigs. I think my little pig's pregnant.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Emily saw them come out of their little house one day, and there was goo on both of them.
Ectoplasm.
A sure sign.
Yeah, they got slimed.
So, oh, goodness.
So I really hope that they're both getting, Eleanor's getting big and Pigward's finally starting to grow. Like, I saw him trying to get her pregnant a couple times and he was too short. And now I think he's big enough. He's a big boy now. Yeah.
How long do these pigs stay pregnant? You know, the gestation period.
Interesting that you asked that, Chud. 3 months, 3 weeks, 3 days.
That's
really. Hey, I'm glad you got that bell, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's my number.
Yeah.
That's your number?
333. Mm-hmm. It's been my number since I was in my 20s. I don't know why. It's just attached to me all the time.
But heavily a Masonic number.
Yeah. So they're 3 months, 3 weeks, and 3 days. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think my sheep are, I don't know, hopefully my sheep are pregnant too. So,
yeah.
And they're pregnant for 147 days. Mm-hmm. So they'd have babies in April.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
So, yeah, I'm excited. And then, yeah, but it's cold here. It's 21 degrees this morning.
That's cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I made the mistake. I have a hose that, the night before this freeze started, which we haven't really come out of, it's been about 2 weeks. I disconnected it. I drained it. I was like, nah, you know what? I'm going to disconnect it too. I should probably wrap it up, but I didn't. I was just kind of strapped for time. I was like, you know, it's, even if it freezes tonight, I'll just do it in a day or two, but it stayed frozen with water in it, just in a mess on my lawn this whole time.
Yeah.
And it's kind of driving me crazy.
Yeah. My hose is frozen this morning too. Luckily I had some water, cause I have to mix up the pig's food with water, and yeah, mm-hmm. I was frozen solid. So yeah, I should do that tonight. Unhook it. Maybe let the, I remembered last night I went out in the well house and turned on, they got a little space heater out there that's running. So
yeah, I keep a heat lamp going in there this time of year.
Yeah.
Just something just to keep it above frozen.
Yeah.
Seems scary.
It's not that scary. Well, it's scary if you forget that kind of stuff. Yeah. Same as if you don't keep your water running when it gets really cold out, and you know, you just deal with frozen pipes and all that crap. It's scary if you forget, but it's not scary if you just kind of keep that as a mental priority all the time.
Yeah, it's been pretty cold here since we've been here, and nothing's ever frozen like that, just the hose. So
yeah,
hopefully
hose is no big deal.
Yeah,
it's just annoying to me. It's mostly that it looks like crap, and I keep it's like a really heavy foot traffic area for me, so like I'm constantly yelling at my son, don't step on that. Don't step on that. And then how often do I step on it my own self? Like, just cause it's hard to think about. Cause it's just it's a big gnarly mess of it, you know, really, really unkept.
Yeah.
Lived in. Yeah. That's
you guys,
good.
You guys been, keeping up with the news at all?
Well, I know the House the Republicans just took the House. I just saw the headline. I haven't seen anything else.
Does that mean that because they've been counting they're still counting votes and trying to decide races and stuff like that?
I was kind of under the impression that didn't happen, but I haven't looked at the news for about 2 days. I'm a little fast from it.
And Trump made his announcement.
I did hear that. I caught my 5 minutes of Republican talk radio in the car today. And that's not Hugh Hewitt. He's off the air for me, not for everyone else. Just my radio station. Prager was pretty excited about that. He's already putting his full support behind him. However, he will support whoever the candidate is. He made that very clear. Matters not to him as long as they're not Democrat.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know, man. It's Trump sucks. He's losing it, man. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see who, he's out of touch. He brags about the vaccine and Operation Operation Warp Speed every chance he gets.
Yep.
And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes over.
I think either his base, or rather maybe the base he needs, is not as stoked on that as he is.
Yeah, for sure.
And he keeps pushing towards it. I don't want him to run. I mean, I'm just sick. That was a taxing, mentally taxing 4 years to hear it all. Just
like 2 years before, and then 4 years after, and now it's another 2 years after. So it's been 8 years. We've gotten two terms of him.
I kind of want to just put it behind me. At the same time, sorry, Deborah, but I love the way he drives Democrats crazy. Like, I do like that, but at the same time, I'm just kind of like, let's find someone else. It doesn't matter who it is; they're all going to drive him crazy. So, you know, let's just do someone
else. I had a very strong, visceral dislike of him long before he started campaigning.
It was like, even when he was like best friends with Oprah and the Clintons and stuff, you didn't like him.
Didn't like him. Mm-mm.
Yeah, I don't even remember. It's crazy because, like, I remember my parents were big fans of, like, The Apprentice and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I remember Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous with Robin Leach when I was a little kid and seeing him, like, on that. And, you know, I'm from the 80s, so he was kind of just always there.
Yeah.
I never
He was really always had there. It. As a little kid in the 80s, it was like, he's the rich guy.
Yeah.
What does he do? If you'd ask me, what does he do? I don't know. He's rich.
Yeah. But we all like, I think my generation all knew, like, oh, that guy went like bankrupt. Even and we're like, wow, if even Donald Trump can go bankrupt like this, you know, so like we all knew that.
Yeah.
He's opening a resort in Saudi Arabia.
What?
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Just announced it like the same, maybe even the same day.
God.
He announced his candidacy.
What's wrong with that guy?
Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. Trump gonna be Trump. That's a fact that we can't avoid. I'm perfectly happy to let him be Trump. Just go do it over there. I'm sick of thinking about
someplace
him.
Someplace out of the public eye. Go be yourself.
And worst of all, if he runs again, especially if he becomes president again, I don't want to go to bat for him.
Yeah, that's the worst part, was having to defend him.
Yeah, I had to defend that fucker, just because, I don't know. It was telling, though. You know, you learned a lot about people who would say, you know, oh, Trump is such a racist, and you'd say, oh yeah, like how? And no one would ever really have an answer. Sometimes they would point to there were good people on both sides,
or they're not sending their best.
Yeah, little things like that, but it. Like, remember this term, dog whistle? He was always dog whistling.
Well, how about the trope that he's anti-Semitic?
Uh-huh.
And it's like, no, he's not anti-Semitic. He's the biggest Zionist the world's ever known, you know? Like, he's got Jared Kushner, who is like, used to sleep in the same bed with Benjamin Netanyahu when he was a little kid as his son-in-law.
So
he and Ivanka are saying that they're not participating. They're done with politics.
Yeah, probably a smart deal. They just go be a Kabbalist Jews somewhere else and just stay out of the, you know, deal with AIPAC and all that stuff. So Chud, I'm a little nervous about our show today.
Yeah.
He's in the waiting room.
Oh shit!
And I'm a little nervous. So we're talking. We're gonna talking Weimar Germany.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm glad you said Weimar, because I was saying Weimar. It's Weimar. Okay, thank you.
So I think we'll have enough questions to ask our guest, and I'm sure he'll have some opinions. But it's gonna be a good one today. So are you you got some questions to ask Chud?
I'm not prepared, no, but I'm familiar with the subject, and I honestly haven't been listening to Pete as carefully as I did. I know he just did a whole thing on the Weimar Republic, and I kind of missed all of that. So hearing his point of view will be awesome. I'm looking
Well,
really
what
forward
I
to it.
want to do is draw parallels to today,
modern times.
Yeah,
and how in the US,
how maybe it might be happening right now, you know.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
and what that leads to, and what are some of the causes, the symptoms, the causes, and the results of when something like that happens.
Yeah.
And yeah. All right. So should we pause and let him in?
Let's do it.
All right, guys, we're back, and we are really excited, a little nervous, and really happy to have our guest here today. It's been a long time coming. Pete Quiñones, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah. Yeah, we are too. And yeah, it's just Chud and I are both big fans. And, you know, my awakening started in Chud's a old Ron Paul guy. Mine started okay. from I'm like a Dave Smith on Joe Rogan guy.
Okay. Oh, that's
and,
cool.
And then, you know, from there.
Yeah, I'm a Ron Paul. I'm a Ron Paul 2007 guy.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and
about
then,
the time I started finding it.
I think I found you in 2018. I've been with you ever since, you know, going from I was a libertarian with you. I was an agorist with you. I was a post-libertarian with you. Now I'm a member of the dissident right, I think. So I'm not quite sure
but
yet.
We didn't call it libertarian back then.
Yeah, we called it just...
No, we were very proud of our ANCAPism. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was fiscally conservative and, you know, what's the rest of it?
Socially liberal?
Yeah, that was me. But Deborah has been the same, pretty much the same. She hasn't really evolved that much in her political views, but she's come a long way in other ways as well. Mm-hmm. But today...
I think I've changed somewhat in my political views. I still may be the same, a member of the same party.
Yeah,
but,
you're the same voting block, but you don't feel as confident about it as you did before.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's a little bit of growth. But the thing that I've been the most interested in lately, and it's been a lot, I've learned a lot from your show, is just drawing parallels to the horrible times in history throughout the past few hundred years and how it's replaying itself out perfectly right now. You know, we all live on the West Coast. Deborah lives across the Golden Gate Bridge from San Francisco. I live an hour northwest of Portland, but it's doesn't look, you wouldn't know it if you saw where I live. And Chud lives in between Vancouver, British Columbia, and Seattle, Washington. So
yeah, in the States.
And yeah. I'm in a very scary place for a lot of people who on the West Coast, they probably wouldn't even want to come here.
Alabama.
Yeah, yeah. Home of the Mises Institute.
Been to the
Gulf. About seven. Oh, you've been to the Gulf? Oh, it's beautiful there. It's so gorgeous there. Yeah.
Crazy beach.
Yeah. But so recently we've heard you do some shows about the Weimar Republic and just kind of how it's replaying today. And we wanted to get into that with you. So before that, you know, if you want to tell everybody a little bit about yourself besides what I just said, go for it.
Sure. Back in 2017, July, I started a podcast called The Free Man Beyond the Wall and, you know, just concentrated on libertarian anarcho-capitalist theory. After 25 episodes, I started doing interviews and, you know, I pretty much stayed the same. I mean, right around 2019, I had Paul Gottfried on a couple times and people were raising their eyebrows about that. And, you know, I was just like, all right, well, what the, you know, there seems to be violence, a lot of violence in the streets happening. And this was before 2020. I was noticing this. And then when COVID came along, I immediately knew that this was going to be something different. February 23rd, Monica Perez and I dropped a podcast where we said that it was going to be about vaccine passports. It was going to be vaccine mandates.
I distinctly remember that episode. That was the first time I ever heard Monica. So
Yeah.
Oh,
And
okay.
we pretty much knew exactly what they were going to do. Both of, you know, both her and I are the same age. We were adults well into our adulthood on 9/11, and we knew that what happened after 9/11, and we knew that this was going to be much worse. We just knew right off the bat. As soon as the NBA shut down, I was like, no one's throwing billions of dollars away. This is something is happening here. And I
Yeah.
immediately started speaking out against it. And I also noticed that no one was coming to the libertarians for answers. As a matter of fact, they were mocking the libertarians on social media. So I was like, well, I don't know, the libertarianism has an answer for this. And even if they do have an answer for it, they don't have the power to implement that answer. So let me look around. And I found I had known who Curtis Yarvin, Mencius Moldbug, was, and I knew that he used to be a Misesian, Rothbard guy. So I started reading stuff, and I found an article called "Why I'm Not a Libertarian." And the funny thing is that his conclude he talks about why he's not a libertarian, but his conclusions were very libertarian-ish. So you know, he hadn't strayed that far away, and I just came to the conclusion that you're not going to change anything in this culture without power. And libertarians don't want power. Many libertarians consider it to be immoral. Shane Hazel, who was the running for governor under Libertarian Party ticket of Georgia, said that power needs to be destroyed. And when he said that, I mean, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been like, yeah, power needs to be destroyed. Now I laughed. I was like, power is here. People wield power. The fact that there are people interact, create power dynamics. Power is not going anywhere. And then I realized that Andrew Breitbart was wrong when he said politics is downstream from culture. I figured out, and with the help of people like Orrin McIntyre, that culture is downstream from power. You need power in order to create a culture. And that is why, you know, transgenderism is so popular right now, because the people in power are pushing it. The governor of Illinois is one of the biggest pushers of transgenderism in the world. And I mean, he has power, Pritzker. So I just came
He's
to the
got a
conclusion.
hot daughter, though.
Does he? Well, I mean, I don't know how that happened, because he and his wife are goblins.
No, the I think his daughter used to be his son.
Oh God. Well, yeah, maybe that has something to do with it. But I just came to the conclusion that without power, basically I'm at the point right now where I'm like, okay, if you want to be able to live your life like you want to, and you want to see sanity in the world, because I think the world is very insane right now, you have to get your friends in power. And your friends have to be willing to wield power in a way that the progressives have been wielding power since they took it. And so I'm here. I'm not there are some libertarian ideas that I like, but I cannot call myself a libertarian. I don't know what to call myself anymore. People ask, and I'm just like, all right, I'm like a real far right winger. And they're like, well, what does that mean? And they're like, that sounds like a Nazi. And I'm like, you could say whatever you want. I don't care. I don't know. It's like, a friend of mine told me, he said, we're going to have to become what the enemy fears the most. And when he said that, I was like, oh man, well, we just might. And I think the world is headed on an insanely downward path towards transhumanism. I don't even think transgenderism is even it's just on the path. I think we're headed towards transhumanism, and transhumanists hate humanity, and they're going to hate people like me who are going to be like, no, I'm not bowing to what you have to say. I'm not, no, we're if it comes down to it, we're going to have to fight this out. And so I've become a big I just released a Substack today, and I said, try to move to the smallest, if you feel like I do, try to move to the smallest town you can. And if your sheriff it has the attitude of, well, if the feds want to come in here and try to force vaccinations or do this, the ATF wants to come in, we're going to meet them at the line of the city, and we're going to tell them that they're not allowed in here. And if the sheriff doesn't want to do that, run for sheriff. You don't have to, in most jurisdictions, you don't even have to be law enforcement to run for the office of sheriff. to just become a sheriff, put together a militia, and beat back this insane, insane federal government that are, is, these people are psychotic. And I mean, I don't see any path outside of them. I mean, we've already seen that they've declared war on, you know, almost half the population. So what do we do? So that's my path from, hey, everybody should be free and leave everyone alone. And, you know, it's, you leave me alone, I'll leave you alone, to, you know, and to, you know, to, these people want us dead. What are we going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a major jump. I repeat something I heard you say a lot. I don't know if you came up with it, but the living in Ancapistan in your head.
Yeah, that was mine. Yeah.
Was that yours?
Kind of, kind of proud of that one.
dude, it's awesome. I've repeated it multiple times because it's so true. Like what you're describing here, you know, it puts it all together of that. You have to recognize that that power exists. The power is there. It's not going away. No matter how much we meditate on it not existing, that doesn't make it go away. And it's so easy for people from like a nonviolent perspective to want to just stay there in their head and be like, no. Because I've had that attitude my whole life. Maybe not my whole life, but for a greater part of my life of that, leave me alone. I want to do things. I want to do things different than you. So just leave me alone to do it. But yeah, as you're saying, in the last 3 years it's been now, I mean, we have watched that it needs to become apparent. It has to have become apparent to anyone in my position that they want us dead. And if they don't want us dead, they want us to kill each other. You know, they want us to fight each other, to death.
Michael Malice says, you know, they want you dead, but they'll settle for your submission. Mm-hmm. Sam Hyde says, you know, they want you dead, your children raped, and they think it's funny. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and these are people with addresses, so.
Yeah. And how's it going, Deborah?
Oh, so far, just
oh, yeah. Hey, Deb.
I'm learning stuff. Keep going.
We'll ask some boring stuff and then we'll get into Weimar. I live in a ridiculously small unincorporated town. There's no mayor or anything where I live. There's no, we have the sheriff and everything like that. And then I'm sandwiched in between a town of 20,000 people and a town of like 3,000 people. At what level do you think, we just had midterms, at what level do you think voting stops mattering? Do you think it at county level, at state level?
I think for the most part, local and county. Obviously, there are some states where, you know, the vote in 2018 when DeSantis ran against the black gay crackhead.
Yeah. 13,000 votes, right?
32,000.
Okay.
Just about 32,000. And that vote. As somebody who lived in Florida for 20 years and knows Florida's economy very well, Florida is all about tourism. If the black gay crackhead would have won, he would have shut down the state just like so many other Democratic governors did. That election statewide mattered. And, you know, so when people say, oh, you know, elections don't matter and everything, I can point to that one. And, you know, most of the time when you point out the outlier, it really like proves the rule. But that one's really hard because, I mean, you're talking about a whole state. I mean, people I love who live in that state still, you know, people I still have family in that state. To watch them, if I would have watched them, you know, have their economy be destroyed, that would have been. I don't know how I could have handled that, you know.
Yeah.
And I was living in Georgia at the time, and we actually we, you know, people don't remember that DeSantis did shut down the state, but he shut it down for a very short time. In Georgia, Kemp shut down the state for about 10 days. He opened it after 8, and we actually were open before Florida was. And I mean, I was having food in restaurants like the last week in April. So, you know, Georgia since then has become a hellhole, especially through, because just a month after that, you have the summer of George starts, and, you know, people are getting killed in the streets. Nobody wants to talk about the fact that, you know, almost 40 Americans were murdered in the streets by roving psychopaths.
I believe they were called mostly peaceful protesters.
Mostly peaceful protesters.
Fiery but peaceful right. protesters.
Yeah. I mean, 40 almost 40 Americans murdered in the streets. I don't know how many other who were hurt that, you know, succumbed to their injuries later. And yeah, so I had to get out. I lived the town I lived in used to be Atlanta. If you would have sent me mail and put Atlanta on it, I would have still got it. And I was just way too close to everything that was happening. So I was like, I got to find a smaller town and, you know, just go one state over. But I mean, the Republicans in this state just won last week by more than double the votes of the Democrat. So I think like the governor here won with 941,000 votes and the Democrat got like 411,000. So I mean, it was just, and then the Senate candidate was the same thing. It was a complete slaughter. So seems like people want to keep it a certain way here. And so I'll stay here while that happens. Yeah, but I'm looking for an even smaller town than where I am right now, because this is, you know, a tenth of the population of the Atlanta metro area. And I'm still like, I got to go smaller.
Yeah. Yeah. We lived in a suburb of Portland where you could, you know, you could walk to our house from downtown Portland. So we're like, we got to go now. So, you know, summer of 2021, we got out. And, you know, my wife still has to go into the city to work, which is a bummer. It's a scary place now. Downtown Portland is just, it was never like any sort of special city, but it's still boarded up. It's still, you know, and then the homeless problem there is really crazy. And then I think there's still all sorts of Antifa stuff that goes on. They just don't report on it anymore. But yeah, having to see that in, you know, during that summer and hear about that kind of stuff. And man, it was hard. And I'm glad I don't have to deal with it anymore.
I'm glad you don't either, man. It's that I had people, did you contact me at some point and say, I live right outside of Portland. What the hell can I do? I had people contacting me who were like, I live right outside of Portland and this is coming at me. What the hell do I do? And I'm just like, shoot them. I mean, shoot them. I don't know what else to do.
But yeah, so like my county's good. If you look at, I mean, Oregon's the same as every other state where it's, you know, it's
bless you.
It's Portland is blue, Salem and Eugene where University of Oregon is. And then Astoria up at the very top of the coast, because it's like a vacation area for people from Portland. I'm like this little red county right next to it. So we have a good sheriff. Our sheriff, you know, didn't enforce mandates, anything like that. So, and he just got reelected. So, cool. You know, we're going to tough it out here. And I think there's, you know, like I said, we're out in the middle of nowhere. Nobody's walking to my house. I live on a gravel road. So
sweet.
You know, I think Adam, that goes really well to make the point that it doesn't matter what state you're living in sometimes. You know, it matters more the area of where you're at that is what it really comes down to, because you're in a good place. I've been to your place, like physically I've been there, and that is not Portland. Yeah. That's not even the blue state of Oregon, even though you're absolutely in Oregon. You're on the coast of Oregon, even. You could, no, not quite the coast, but you could claim it, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I hear so much talk from people who are, they're like state shopping, they're governor shopping. They're trying to decide which is the state, where's the state where I'm going to be safe. And, you know, you sound like you're in a real safe state there, in air quotes, Pete, but at the same time, is it really? Like, I would think not as a whole.
I live in a college town and it's a huge college, and you know, it's mostly leftists who go to the college, but you know, when there were no BLM riots here, there were there was barely any protesting. I mean, these people understand that they're surrounded by crazy white people with guns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah,
that helps.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't happen here. I mean, there are places in Alabama. There's one section of Alabama elected a Democrat to the state house, and it was down by Montgomery. And that was not a anyone who's ever been to Montgomery knows that wasn't a shock. But I mean, the whole rest of the state is red. So is there a chance that things can happen? Sure, there's a chance that things can happen. But that's why you need to, I'll use a term that the Democrats love to use when it comes to elections. That's why you need to fortify your you need to fortify your hometown. And, you know, and that I think that starts. The John Birch Society always had that right. As much as there's a lot of things I didn't agree with in the John Birch Society, but the John Birch Society always said that the sheriff was the most important elected office in the country, the local sheriff. Yeah. And a good local sheriff can really nip this stuff in the bud. So.
Yeah, that's the one thing that angers me a lot is when people like conflate Oregon with Portland, but then there'll be the people who are like, oh, I just moved to Austin or Nashville. And it's like, I texted Buck last week and I said, hey man, Beto O'Rourke just got 3.5 million votes in your state. Does that concern you at all? And he said, no, he didn't. Abbott didn't really campaign very much. So,
well, I've been to Austin 4 times this year. And it's the first times I'd ever been to Austin. So I was there 4 times this year. Even, Dallas, I went to Dallas this year. I was just in Lake Jackson, which is where Ron Paul's district, last weekend, not this past weekend, the previous weekend. I've been to Houston a couple times, and Texas really is a different country. It has the feel of a different, even in blue Austin, there's something different about it. I think that they understand that they're, Austin is right there, but also Round Rock is right there, right outside there. And Round Rock is red. Georgetown is red. All these places surrounding them are red. And I think it really keeps them, it keeps Austin from becoming dominant at all. I think that even when you talk to, you go there and, people wouldn't say, oh, Mexicans. You talk to some Mexicans there and their family like settled the land that they live on when it was Mexico. And they're like, they want Texas to secede and become its own nation. They're like a big part of the Texas secession movement is people whose families, generational Mexicans. And, it's beautiful to see. It really is.
Do they culturally present as like American or?
Oh, man, it's everything's so mixed there. I remember the first time I ever went to Texas, I went down to Lake Jackson where Ron Paul is. And I knew I was going to be there for about 48 hours. And I was like, what do I want to eat when I'm here in my Airbnb and everything? And it's just like, I'm just going to go to a Chinese place and I'm going to get some fried rice and I'll just eat fried rice for every meal and everything like that. And I went to a Chinese place, ordered fried rice, went back, opened it up. The rice was yellow.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells you about how these two cultures have combined, but they've this American culture and this Mexican culture have combined, but it just seems to work. It just seems that they're very happy to be Americans, but Texas is I went to an event in Texas earlier this year and they stood up and they didn't do the Pledge of Allegiance. They did the Pledge of Allegiance, the Texas Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah.
They have the schools teach, they have a separate history class for Texas history. Texas is it's another country. It really is. And it's a lot of fun to go there. I like it there a lot, except it's just, it's getting it's another place like Florida that's getting expensive because people are just pouring into it, So
yeah.
A lot of Californians moved there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I remember the first time that I went there, I went out and got barbecue in Elgin, which is outside of Austin, but it's like not, you know, it's out in hill country. And there's this really good barbecue place there. And I remember seeing like it was not what I expected. There was like a bunch of like black, white mixed families, but like everybody's dressed like cowboys. I'm like, oh, like this makes sense because there's black people in the South. Like there's nothing more
It's a
than
shared culture.
yeah,
And that's the most important thing is a shared culture,
And then
a high trust culture.
I started thinking like, what, there's a lot of black people in California where I was living at the time. I'm like, and this is like the most segregated place in the world. You know, there's no mixing of cultures between in West
In
Coast cities. And but in the South, it's been for so long, there's probably more people, there's probably more I don't know, racial
20,
mixture.
20 minutes north of me, there's this little town right off, I think it's off of 280, that is 100% black, and they're all lifted pickup trucks and Trump flags. And I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, you're the South is a different place. And I think it's, I think a lot of people who are like scared of the South or think they have this idea of what the South is, they should come here and spend some time here, and they'll be like, oh wow, this is it's actually really cool here. You're gonna have a good time,
If you just compare that to like where I'm at in the northwest tip of the country, where some people might even say things like, well, there's never really been racism around here, you know, because I can count all the black people on my fingers. Which is, you know, there's some other cultures here, but it's predominantly white. But there are a lot of hippies, a lot of colleges, a lot of people with a lot of ideals that they feel that they embrace so well. But it's a lot of them is them telling people what they're doing wrong while they go about going bar hopping every night with a bunch of people who look like them, which shouldn't really fucking matter. But then they see someone like me driving a big pickup and they're like, oh, that guy, we know that guy's a racist piece of shit. And it's like, God damn it, guys. Like
I mean,
it's also backwards.
I grew up until I left New York when I was 18. I grew up in the Bronx, and I can tell you from New York City is and always has been, for the most part, very segregated. I mean, in the early 20th century, there weren't only German neighborhoods. There were like East German neighborhoods, not like East West that happened, because of the Cold War. But like people from the western part of Germany they'd have their own neighborhood, and people from the eastern part of Germany. And then a couple blocks over was Little Italy. And then, Little Italy, anyone who's ever been to New York, knows if you're walking south on the if you're walking down the island, and you get to you once you pass Little Italy, Little Italy ends at Canal Street. You cross over on Mott Street, and now you're in Chinatown. And it's just, it's very, very seg always been very segregated. But then you come to the South, and it's like, you're gonna have maybe by income, but like if you go to the Buckhead section of Atlanta, you're talking about old money and a little bit of new money, and it's pretty mixed. It's pretty mixed racially. So, you get a lot, it's big cities where you see segregation more than anywhere else
But
now.
it's all it's everything's covert.
Yeah, it's that mixing of cultures that seems to be so important, really. Not just mixing of cultures, not like take not forced mixing, but like in harmony, you know, like multiple cultures being able to exist within each other and not have it be a big deal. Whereas those
You have to
segregated
have
areas.
common. You have to have common bonds. There has to be something common there. It's like it seems like Texas now. A lot of people are coming together over Texas. That they want to secede from the nation. And I think if they secede, part of North Mexico is going to be part of Texas as well. So, it just yeah. I mean, it just. It is what it is. It's it really it's just people who share values. if you don't share values with somebody, you know, it's kind of hard to have neighbors who, you know, one person's putting out Black Lives Matter signs and another one's putting out a Trump flag. I mean,
yeah.
unless there is a relationship that has for years and years, that's not going to work out. And that can even not work out because we've seen families break up over that.
But I thought diversity isn't our greatest strength.
I don't think so. I mean, yeah. I love when the leftists the people on the left who are like, the United States needs to be more like Sweden. And it's like, oh, so all white?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's not all white anymore. And it's also now they had to change the definition of rape because they let in a bunch of refugees from the third, not even the third world, probably considered the fourth world. You know, and now women don't know. They ask women, oh, were you raped? And they're like, I don't know what that even means anymore. It's like, okay, what the hell is going on there? You know, so
in Sweden?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's really bad, Deborah.
I missed all of that.
Wonder why.
Yeah, I've heard antidepressant use in Sweden is way up now too. It's a lot sad. Of that. Yeah.
There's no go zones in Sweden now.
Yeah.
Place where Swedes don't go.
Yeah, I know a guy that got stabbed there a couple years back. So yeah, it's
probably not by a Swede.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, changing gears now, can we start talking about the Weimar Republic a little bit?
Sure.
I know most people, you know, I remember hearing about it. You know, it's like, oh, they devalued the currency and people were buying bread with a wheelbarrow full of bills, and people would buy two beers because by the time they drank them, the price would have changed, you know. But listening to you and some other people recently, I've learned that there was much more to it, and looking into it, it's mirroring a lot of what's going on today. So can we I know you'll probably have to dumb it down a little bit for us, but can we give the three of us a brief rundown of Weimar Germany?
Sure. You can't really talk about Weimar Germany without going back to Prussia. And you know, a lot of people will say that, you know, Prussia was this, a lot of people have built it up to be this perfect kind of semi-perfect kind of, a lot of what came to destroy Weimar was already prevalent in the 1880s, 1890s, and 1900s. So there was depravity already starting to happen, but it was underground. World War One is the place that you have to start. So Prussia is the fourth country into the war. At the end of the war, they are, due to the Treaty of Versailles, they are considered to be the ones who started it. It was all their fault, and they have to pay all the reparations for it. So, but that's something that a lot of people know. What they don't know is that starting in 1918, a blockade, much like the blockade we see in Yemen right now, preventing food from getting into the country, was started. And it was started by the Allies. It was the United States and England. And it was, the intention was to basically starve the Prussian people and the Austrians. There's a book called Blockade by Anna Eisenmenger. A friend of mine sent me a copy of it. I found a PDF of it. And it's basically a diary of this woman from 1914 to 1924. She's Austrian. She talks about her children going off to war, coming back. One's blind. The other one comes back and he's a communist. He's basically adopted Marx. And what the diary is it basically shows how they go from 1500 calorie a day diet to 1200 calorie a day diet to 800 calorie a day diet to 400 calorie a day diet to where are we going to get food to eat? And this was done on purpose. This was done to starve the people.
That happened relatively quickly, correct?
Yes. And by the way, they did the same thing to the German people after World War II. Yeah. They also made rape was legal.
Deborah, listen to
World War II.
We heard Daryl on your guy from Martyr Maid. We heard him on your show, and I forced Deborah to listen to his episode 19, The Anti-Humans, and that was the most brutal. That was the most brutal podcast, maybe the best podcast I've ever listened to, but the most brutal, horrible. You know, and I'm Orthodox Christian, man. That was like really, really rough for me. You know.
So. Yeah. Oh yeah. And so you have this starvation happening. Then people talk about the inflation. Inflation doesn't happen. And you also have to understand that Germany was so weak that communists were pouring over the border from Russia to try and take over Germany. You had the KDP, which was the Communist Party of Germany. And they were basically at the point where they could take over and Germany was going to be communist. And on top of that, Berlin turns into Sodom and Gomorrah. The question has always been asked, how did this happen? How was pornography just show up in the streets in Berlin? The book Voluptuous Panic talks about all the levels, the classes of prostitutes down to the child prostitutes.
Jesus.
And also you have the Institute for Sexology. I cannot pronounce the German name of this, run by a gentleman named Magnus Hirschfeld. And I heard a bell. And Magnus Hirschfeld, it was basically a gay brothel, a gay bathhouse, and also a place where they were doing transgender surgeries.
Whoa. And this was prior to becoming the Weimar Republic.
This is during. Yeah.
Okay.
This is all happening. And, I have a, Voluptuous Panic talks about his Institute of Sexology, July 1919. He opens up. How does somebody open up in July of 1919 when people are starving? How does somebody have the money to open up the Institute of Sexology in Berlin? There were study rooms, laboratories, medical clinics, a museum space devoted to sexual pathology and erotic folkways. George Gershwin, Ben Heck, Douglas Fairbanks, all these people were visitors who came there. It functioned as a hospital, a free university. Medical advice was offered without charge. Scientific lectures by leading sexologists. The hell is a sexologist? You have... The Institute also housed Germany's first marriage bureau and clinics for the treatment of venereal disease and other sexual maladies, which is a good thing. Politically, the Institute provided a forum for progressive lawyers and government officials who sought to eradicate the laws against homosexuality and defend Germany's legal abortion rights from the growing onslaught of fascist and religious parties. Most of the legal work involved protecting gay men against threats of petty blackmail, things like that. Above the gate to the Institute, there was an inscription, sacred to love and to sorrow. And you have to understand, once you understand exactly what the history of Prussia and what it was, coming out of a war and while starvation is still going on, people are like, what the hell? How the heck is this happening? Why are there child prostitutes in the street? Why does my wife have to prostitute herself? Why is male prostitution? What do you think the morale of a society is when males, females, and children have to go on the streets to prostitute themselves just so that they can feed themselves if they can find food. This basically creates an environment where somebody steps up and says, we are proud people with a proud heritage. We should not be putting up with this. And we need to fight against it. We need to fight against the sexual depravity, the inflation, the bankers, the communists that are pouring over the borders. I mean, there were literally like the National Socialists got their start by like Goering and Rahm are fighting communists or killing communists in the street. There are street battles, there are street wars in Berlin where, you know, were some of the National Socialists who were veterans of World War One. So, I mean, they knew how to kill, they knew how to use guns, are basically fighting communists. It's like, it's a mini version of the Spanish Civil War of 1936. And then what was to come in World War II. But this all started 20 years earlier when a concerted effort was made to destroy these people. To absolutely, you know, gut them of not only their heritage, who they are, but also of their lives.
Their culture.
Just destroyed whatever culture they had.
Yeah.
Was completely destroyed. And, you know, somebody who stands up and says, you know, says, our children shouldn't be prostitutes. You know, our men should not be prostitutes. We should have enough food to eat. These bankers shouldn't be in control of us. Of course. I mean, think about now. I mean, there are a lot of people, including myself, who look at like, this is the trans, like the transgender thing, just the transgender thing. Let's just look at that. I mean, this is an epidemic. I mean, there is no way. I mean, I've been reading articles about how one high school kid will be like, I'm transgender. And then all of a sudden, four or five of her and his friends decide they're transgender too. Does that seem logical to, I mean, does that seem logical to anyone?
It's trendy, popular bullshit. You know,
I put out a tweet today. I said, transgenderism is a, you know, more vile and violent and more dangerous version of like members only jackets and JNCO jeans.
Yeah.
I mean, they're wearing, it's just basically it's a costume to them. But the problem is, along with this costume comes drugs that change their, change their chemistry forever, can chemical castration. What are we doing? You know, and I'm out here sounding the alarm and going, if we don't stop this, somebody is going to rise up and say, hey, remember what America used to be like? Why are we putting up with this? History doesn't necessarily repeat itself, but it definitely rhymes. And I'm not saying he's going to have a funny mustache and he's going to have a really weird haircut and he's going to be a failed artist. Although the failed artist thing could probably be, I wouldn't count that out. But we're going down a path, man, we've seen this before. And to not recognize it and not see, I talk to a lot of people about this privately. Most of the people I talk to think that we're beyond, that it can't be reversed, that it is just inevitable that it's going to come to violence and it's going to come to, put it this way, the Democrats the progressives have already opened up the door for authoritarianism. All you had to do was watch Joe Biden's speech in Philadelphia with a couple stormtroopers behind him, a red background that looks like he's talking out of at the gates of hell. And he's saying that almost half the country is immoral for questioning. I'm not going to say this because it's almost gotten my YouTube taken down, but there was an event that happened in November in 2020, the first Tuesday in November in 2020. It is immoral. There is something wrong with you if you question that. That there is something, there's, you're bad. You're bad if you question that. Okay. Okay, so now we get to what Paul Gottfried calls the therapeutic state. Now the state is judging people's mental health on what they believe. Okay. All right. And you don't think there's going to be a backlash from this?
That's all happening as like with all these issues. We have the weakest men, in air quotes, men.
Yeah, I read the other day that the average man's testosterone is half of what it was 30 years ago, 40 years ago.
I work a day job and I'm around a lot of it's hard to call them men, but men who are in their early 20s, and it's the Pete, you would be blown away at how many times in a week I have someone have an anxiety attack that makes them shake over me asking them to do something, not asking them to do something, but maybe correcting them, being critical, like, oh, hey, you didn't do something right. You need to do it again. And it's like these people have meltdowns. And I would think, man, I just got bad luck. I'm around a bunch of pussies, but I know that this is happening in droves across the nation. And if we have a slow burn with this, if we keep this up the way it is for any period of time, to where those men become the men that are actually supposed to be bearing, having children, raising children, doing the work for the country.
What about in charge?
Yes, that's
what. Do you know what happens when weak people get in charge? Okay, Deborah's going to hate this. Female cops are the absolute worst idea.
Well, I think
female cops are, because they are. I mean, come on, 99.9% of the women in the world cannot handle me physically. I mean, I can just manhandle them. They go for their gun. They go for their taser. They go for something first, where, you know, a male cop. Well, I mean, we know that most male cops now or two will just reach for the gun first, and they don't really give a shit because they can't be prosecuted for anything. But, you know, it's what I'm saying is, if you have weak leadership, if these people end up in power, the only way they're going to know how to govern is with excessive violence, because they're weak and they know it.
Deborah, what was the point you were trying to make a minute ago?
No worries. That the women's rights movement caused the downfall of masculinity.
I believe.
And femininity, probably, too.
Because now women, well, I think there's a good argument to be made that because of how weak men have become, women have had to take on male roles. And, you know, that's why you have, you know.
And the inverse. Well,
look at birth rates. Look at what birth rates are doing.
I have a whole podcast that's dedicated to this. My wife and I do The World As It Is Today, where we try to examine, you know, what happened to, it started with us going, we need to get back to the nuclear family. But we quickly came to realize that, oh, wait, that was a fucking psyop of sorts.
It was.
We put ourselves in a position where we no longer had grandparents in the house. We no longer have kids in the house. The man is out of the house all day, not working on his homestead, not being able to be a homemaker himself, putting the wife as the homemaker. Also, at the same time, we have a whole bunch of convenience items such as dishwashers and Hostess cakes, so you don't even have to bake dessert for your family anymore. They stay at home and they're really bored for this period of time before feminism comes along and says, hey, you're worth more than that. And they are. They're worth more than what they were in that position. But it took us down this whole road that leads us to exactly what we're talking about today.
Have you read The Occult Roots of Feminism by Rachel Wilson, Pete?
No, I have not.
It's pretty good, man. It's a short read, but she burns through it, and like the history of she does conspiracy and some other stuff really well mixed together, and it puts it all out there. It's pretty good. So
yeah, nature shows that we have roles, natural roles, and the more we, and you can say that comes from nature, you can say it comes from God, I say it comes from God. The more you ignore it and the more you deny it, the worse things are going to become. I mean, it's hard to look at the world right now and not think that we're being punished for something. And I know as an Orthodox Christian, you could probably understand that, is that, and I'm, basically a Calvinist. I'm in the Protestant camp as a hardcore Calvinist. And it's just hard for me to not look at the world right now and look at society as a whole. I mean, do you know how many countries, powerful countries, the birth rates are just like down? And, I mean, China did it to themselves, sure.
Yeah, but Japan's really bad right now.
Japan's bad. The United States, Russia's really bad. Ukraine is really bad. I mean, all of these countries, they're all just, and who's having the babies?
Yeah.
The third world.
Yeah.
The third world. I mean, and these are people who cannot govern themselves. So what's going to happen? And they don't share our culture. And if they can't govern themselves and they need to find some way to survive, what are they going to do? They're going to pour here. They're going to come here. They're going to go to other places. They're going to go to places where people know how to govern themselves. And they're pretty much going to overwhelm. And I mean, what do they say? And I think that this is underestimating it a lot. Since Biden took office, 5 million illegal aliens have poured over the border. I think that's low. And now even the Republicans are talking about amnesty. Well, I mean, these are people who don't share a culture with us and have a tendency to vote in the vote for free stuff. And people can make the arguments all they want. Oh, a lot of the people from Central America are Catholics. And it's like, yeah, but that's not, but social issues are different. The black community does not like this transgender shit at all, but they still keep voting for the people who are pushing it. It just goes to show that there is I don't know if they're voting. They're not voting on social. They're voting financially. They're voting for based on what they can get. And this is the same thing with people pouring over the border. And I'm willing to bet that people pouring over the border from Nordic countries are doing the same damn thing. So, I mean, close a border. Close the fucking port right now.
Deborah, thoughts on immigration, Deborah?
That's a tough one for me because I just, I don't want to be overrun and not have whatever the jobs or whatever. However, I hate the thought of people not being able to live where they choose to live.
What do you think about us? Do you think we should keep some semblance of an American culture?
Well, that's what we were founded upon. Yeah.
What does that culture look like? I mean, right from the very beginning from the start of the country, there have been different cultures. The culture of Georgia was not the same culture of Philadelphia. It's never been a melting pot. It's always been a salad. No one's melting into each other. Everybody's has their own beliefs and they're holding on to them, especially now. I mean, you want to talk about a salad. I mean, people will not budge. And I don't blame them. I mean, too much has been foisted upon them. And, I mean, I hate to say it, but it's like, sure, if you want to talk about abortion, things like that, the right has been like, hey, we shouldn't be aborting babies. No one should be aborting babies. But the left it historically has just been, you have to accept this, okay? You have to accept the Great Society, LBJ. I mean, which basically destroyed the Black family. And in the 1950s, the black community had less divorce than the white community, and the Great Society destroyed the Black community. And you just look at everything that's happened since then. And then, you know, they go off the gold standard in 1971. And as soon as they went off the gold standard in 1971, that's it. I mean, where we are now is the gold standard. I mean, in 1971, I think my parents said they could have got a house, for a big house in Pennsylvania, for $25,000, $20,000. That same house now, what, 300? Is that just because, you know, they're not making any land anymore, or did they just inflate the money supply to the point where it costs $300,000 now? Oh, and speaking of inflated money supply, where have we seen that really fuck shit up in the past?
Yeah,
Weimar.
Republic. Yeah,
they just printed money. They ran out of money, so they printed more.
Yeah, and you know, so what are we doing now? And this, I think, this inflation that we're experiencing now is from Trump. I think it's from Trump. So what's going to happen when the inflation from Biden from 2021 comes around?
It's nuts to think about it on that level.
Oh yeah, I mean, people automatically, you know, everything's become so binary that if you start talking about how much you hate the left, they automatically think you're a Trumper or something. Trump was a disaster. I mean, Operation Warp Speed.
That's his greatest accomplishment.
Our whole intro before you came on was about this. Like, me and Adam were sharing that sentiment exactly. It's tough. It was tough. It was a tough time when he was in his position, because people like us were finding ourselves defending this guy, but we don't
if
like
I
him.
Was if I was Trump on January 7th or 8th of 2021, you know what I would have been doing? I would have been pardoning everyone who went into the Capitol that day.
Yeah,
because you know what, if like right now, if they had riots in the street, or you know, if we had another return to 2020 or something like that, you're telling me that the people who get arrested, Biden's not just going to pardon them? That Kamala Harris isn't going to convince him to pardon them? Kamala Harris, who was one of the main people who was raising bail to get people out of jail in 2020, people who were arrested for rioting in the streets.
Yeah, and that's
And Trump didn't take care of his own people.
Yeah, the district attorney where I live doesn't even press charges on those people.
Yeah, I mean, Trump was too busy. Trump was too busy pardoning rappers and murderers, which are the same thing.
And Susan B. Anthony, a cultist.
Yeah, I mean, this guy sucked. This guy sucked. I mean, he was terrible. And he also proved that no one is going to drain the swamp without going in there and being ready to take a bullet in the head. Because if you go in there and Trump was proof positive that if you go in there saying, I'm going to make some real change here, you're just going to get attacked right from the start. You know, I mean, and not if you're a leftist, because if you're a leftist, if you're a Democrat and you go in there and you say, I'm going to change things. Well, the CIA is owned by progressives. The Pentagon is owned by progressives. They've all adopted this progressive ideology, and they're not going to change anything. I mean, what are they going to change? I mean, they're maybe crack down on right wingers or something like that. Make it criminal to have right wing thought.
Yeah.
You know,
after,
so
go after the PTA.
Yeah. So yeah, go, you know, if people protest being taught transgenderism or being taught critical race theory at a PTA meeting, Merrick Garland, the head cop in the country, calls them domestic terrorists. Really? Because you care about your kids? Is that where we're at? Okay. keep that up. Keep that up. I mean, seriously, I mean, there's a reason why J.D. Vance got elected in Ohio. There's a reason why Blake Masters, why they had to. Well, it's
fortify.
Probably
they fortified.
They had to fortify the election against Blake Masters in Arizona and Kari Lake, because Blake Masters is the kind of guy who would go in there and go, I'm going to fuck shit up and you're going to have to kill me. At least I think he is. I mean, who knows? I thought, yeah, I knew Trump wasn't like that. You know, it's like Curtis Yarvin said, you knew Trump wasn't going to change anything when he wouldn't give up his businesses. Every other president who owned a business going in, they always put it in a trust or, you know, sell it or something like that. And Trump's just like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm keeping it. Well, you're not. Then he's not ready to cross the Rubicon.
Yeah.
Until you get someone who's ready to go in there and cross the Rubicon, you get someone who's ready to go in there and do that. Oh, things are getting real interesting. Things get, well, I mean, if they're a right winger, yeah, everybody talks about, you know, a red Caesar coming up. And then, you know, Charles Haywood talks about, well, what if that Caesar's blue? I'm like, I don't think you need a blue Caesar when you own everything. You own the press, you own the universities, you own pretty much every friggin' government agency. You know, you don't need a blue Caesar. You need a red one.
You think that red Caesar emerges in the next 2 years?
No,
no,
no. It's gonna be decades. The American people are just not ready for it. I mean, look, the GOP didn't even. I mean, the GOP couldn't run on inflation, and they couldn't run on COVID in 2022 because how many of them were against, spoke out against the COVID lockdowns, and how many of them voted against the the stimulus packages that caused the inflation.
Yeah.
They're just as bad as everyone else. They couldn't even mention it. So why are they going to get voted for? What is it? People don't like change. People don't like change. I like grit. I mean, the best government is, when it comes to this government, the way it's set up right now and who's in it, I like gridlock. I mean, gridlock's the only thing that I like. And that's all I can hope for. Yeah. That's all I can hope for over the next 2 years. 2024, DeSantis is not a Caesar. DeSantis isn't a Caesar. Trump says he's running. This is a guy who couldn't even take care of his own people. Now he's starting to talk about the Jan 6 people. Now he's like, I will pardon them. You know, I will get them out of jail and I will pardon them. It's like, well, most of them are going to be out of jail by that time. And then screw your pardon. You know, you should have been there on January 7th and January 8th going, signing that sheet of paper going, anyone who walked into that Capitol, boom.
Yeah.
Pardoned. Can't arrest absolutely. Them. Let them go. That's what I would have done. The friend that Carl Schmitt's friend enemy distinction. Know who your friends are. Know who your enemies are. Reward your friends. Punish your enemies. That's what politics is. It's what it's always been. Playing make-believe that it isn't. I mean, Biden proved it.
Yeah. One side's really good at that and the other side's terrible at it.
Sucks at it. Really sucks at it.
Yeah. Which side's good? The good ones at it, right, Deborah?
Ask it again. Do I know which side is the good side?
No, which side's good at punishing their enemies?
I think they both are. No? Democrats?
Yeah,
one side definitely takes the cheese on
you
that
guys
one.
Should
because you'd be in jail. Remember that? Remember when he said because you'd be in jail? Did she go to jail?
Nope.
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Joe Biden, anyone who questions that thing that happened the first Tuesday in 2020, those people are what do you call them? Semi-fascists? Just call me a fascist. I'll be fine with that. I mean, I'm fine with that at this point. It's like, I mean, become what your enemy. I mean, the left hates and they're scared of fascists. Become what they're scared of. At least talk like that. So people call me that all the time on social media now. You sound like a fascist. I'm like, and what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do?
It doesn't even mean anything anymore either. So
the power of those words has been stripped by overusage too.
A fascist is someone who advocates for the marriage of business and government. That's what a fascist is. That's what fascism has always been. Somehow over the decades, it has turned into anyone I don't like who's too right, who I think is too right wing.
Yep.
Fascism is all about economics.
And really, they only started saying fascism because they said Nazi one too many times, and it just that lost its power. So now they're on to fascist, and it's like you just have to not care if people are calling you these things.
I mean, Eric July is a rapper. He's black. They call him a Nazi all the time. Mm-hmm. They call him I've seen him called a white supremacist. I'm just like, I don't think these words mean. I don't think these terms mean anything anymore because you've just used them in. You've used them in ways that they don't matter. You know, I can talk about fascism all day, like historic fascism, and use terms that go right over people's heads. I do it all the time. You know, it's just that at this point, you talk about nature. Let's get back to nature. What's natural? A man and a woman and, you know, have kids and you raise the kids and maybe they go to church and they get, I mean, that's basically fascism at this point. That's what they think fascism is. And it's like, well, and fascist, another thing fascist is if you don't vote the way I vote. That all that used to be was, you know, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Tip O'Neill being the Speaker of the House. He was a Democrat. And there was no, I mean, there'd be arguments, but there was no animosity. There was no one calling, Tip O'Neill wasn't calling anyone a fascist or calling somebody, scum or, you know, what did John McCain, John McCain called Rand Paul in his own party. Someone in his own party, like a Putin lover and everything. You didn't hear that kind of stuff out of Tip O'Neill people like back when I was growing up. What happened? Well, I mean, it seems like it's like some people designed it this way, that it was, you know, hey, we need to get these people fighting against these people. And it's easy because really we shouldn't be existing together. There should be a land over here where a bunch of people who are have more conservative thought or right-wing thought live, and they're amongst each other. And there should be a land over here where people who are more left-wing and have left-wing thought should exist with each other. And, you know, you can have your abortion over here and we're not going to have abortion over here. What's wrong with that? Unless you bought into the religion of civic nationalism where, oh, the United States is forever. Well, you know, it's so funny, you know, to hear people talk about how, oh, the union should never be separated and everything. But because especially when they bitched about the National Socialists saying that they were going to last for 1,000 years, you know, that it was going to they were going to reign for 1,000 years. Oh, no, you can't say that. You can't. No, because you're not doing it the way we want to do it. But yet they want to keep the United States together.
I mean, forever.
Yeah. And then if you say, I mean, there are actually people now that if you talk about secession, they're like, you just want slavery.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. Most of the people in this country, and especially the class of people who descended from the slaves, I don't want them near my property. I don't want them to be slaves. I don't want them near my property. I don't want most people near my property.
Let alone use secession to bring that back, which is where people go straight there.
Do you realize how much better the United States would be right now? How much better off we'd be economically and probably socially if there was never any slavery in this country?
Yeah. I used to listen to Bob Murphy have really great points on that, of that. It's not good for the economy to have people who are not making money. They're not making money. They're not contributing to the economy.
And also they're literally doing just enough to not get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing just enough to not get in trouble. Thaddeus Russell talks about this in his book, Renegade History of the United States. slaves would just run away all the time. They would, and they wouldn't run away to like the next state. They'd run down the street because they had friends on another plantation or something like that. And they would just be like, I don't feel like working this week. And it's like, and you know, and the whole thing about the whole myth of, you know, that miniseries Roots in the 1980s just destroyed everybody's, it was so ahistorical. I mean, literally whipping your slave would be like me taking out a baseball bat and beating up this microphone. This is what makes me money. I'm not going to hurt what makes me money. I'm not going to damage what makes me money. I mean, Tom Woods talked about this in his book, Politically Incorrect Guide to American History. It's like the amount of like the evidence for like whippings was so minuscule. It was like this one picture of this one slave that escaped to like Texas. They took a picture of his back. His back had been completely just whipped. And they built a mythology on that. The same myth. Well, you know, I mean, they built a mythology on everything, like that, you know, white slave traders would go to Africa, get off the boats, go and capture black people and then bring them to boats and then tie them to the boats. Where the truth is that they went to Africa and tribal leaders would sell their own people into slavery for gunpowder and guns and things.
Hey, there's this movie on Amazon that I heard about. Have you seen it? Hebrews to Negroes. I heard some guy talking about it.
I don't think it's on Amazon, but I know where it is.
I checked Pete after what's his name, Kyrie Irving brought it up. It was up there last weekend. It was still up.
Was it really?
Yeah.
Oh wow, I got it. I bookmarked it in an app that I have.
Sorry, what was the title again, Adam?
Hebrews to Negroes, and it's just I guess it's like a movie. It's like from kind of a black Hebrew Israelite, which I'm not familiar with because I'm not from the East Coast.
Well, yeah, but... because they mention in the movie that a lot of the people who owned those slave ships were Jewish.
Yeah,
and funny, like, you don't read about that in history books.
Yeah, and for some reason, if you say that, then that makes you
anti-Semitic.
Yeah, anti-Semitic. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and how many times can you go to the well with that?
It's like, yeah, it's interesting how much of an effect a thing like Roots can have on a whole culture. You know, as we get far away from that time and we're living in a more modern society than when most living people don't have any direct stories from it. So it's becoming forgotten. So then we get that. What was it? I was like a 10-part miniseries or something like that. Roots was. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it was long. It was.
It was like I never watched it as a whole. It was on in my house at some point, but when I was. But well,
Alex,
you know,
and Alex Haley. It's proven that he just made the whole thing up.
Yeah. So
he never went to Africa and found out that Kunta Kinte was a relative of his. It was just all completely made up.
Oh, well, they show that to our whole country, to our whole culture, you'll say. And then that starts becoming the new picture, the new history that's like painted in everyone's mind. So then from that point forward, when people are talking about slavery, the first thing that's come into their mind is that whipping and all this stuff that, you know, as we see when we look into real history, that's not the way it went down at all. But good luck convincing the people who are never going to pick up a book, let alone really dig in past the surface level and find out what really happened in history. They all just saw it on TV. They have the visual image. They know how bad it was.
Well, do you remember the trucker protest in Canada?
I remember that.
Do you remember the yes. Do you remember the vice prime minister, what's her name, Chrystia Freeland, I think it is, Chrystia Freeland, yeah, who she got up to do a speech and the first thing she says when she's talking about the trucker protest is that she had relatives that died in the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what does that have to do with this right here? And then she goes on to say that the symbol for the trucker protest, honk honk, is HH and what it really means to Heil Hitler.
88, brother.
I mean, what do you do?
I didn't hear that one. Man, that's insane.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's, I mean, you know, you're just watching it. You're like, you can only go to the victim well. You know, it's like I used to work with this Armenian guy. He actually worked for me. And, you know, he sucked. He was a terrible worker. And when I told him he was a terrible worker, he didn't remind me that the Armenians suffered a genocide at some point. You know, I mean, he could have. He said, hey, you know, my people suffered a genocide at one point. I would have went, you're still fired.
Yeah.
What are you trying to do here? So,
yeah, that was the one thing I got out of, well, I got a lot out of that Martyr Made podcast. But when he talks about, like, he says how often the actual number of Orthodox Christians that were murdered by the Bolsheviks is debated in history, you know, and that's totally fine.
Oh, yeah.
And we talk about this all the time on this show. You can wear Che Guevara shirts and a hammer and sickle shirt, and you can, like,
oh, the Holodomor. There are people who deny that the Holodomor ever happened. Why is that okay?
Yeah.
Why is that okay? Yeah, you know, my mother's side of the family is from that area, is from the you know, that section where Poland, Russia, Ukraine, and Slovakia all intersect right there and everything. I'm sure probably had some people who died in Holodomor. Okay, but why am I not bringing that up all the time?
Yeah,
because my people don't have a lobby in Washington D.C.
Yeah, or a bunch of dual citizens.
And just, how do we go on? How do we go on as a country when everyone's either a victim or is being victimized? I wish someone could answer.
And that's,
I wish
the status. Would
answer that question,
because they want that status. They want to be a victim. Everyone wants to be a victim. You know, I mentioned working with young guys earlier. They have anxiety attacks. That makes them victims. And they're not, when I was that age, if I had an anxiety attack because someone told me told me what I was doing was wrong, I wouldn't tell anyone. I would hide that I had an anxiety attack because, holy shit, I got to man up and do something. They have an anxiety attack. And I know that they use that term because they turn around and they tell everyone, oh my gosh, I had an anxiety attack today. Feel bad for me. It's status.
Can
it's
you
like
get chicks? Can you get chicks with an anxiety attack?
You know, that's a thing. You'd think that would be what it leads to, because we're thinking like we do, like, oh yeah, they're using that as status so they can go get laid or something. But no, they don't want to have sex.
Right. It gets you, if you have an anxiety attack, you can go home and play video games probably.
Yes.
Or bingo. Jack off. Or
for real, ring that bell. You know, I mean, like, they want to be alleviated of their duties so they can go home. They are not interested in procreating. They have unlimited Pornhub and everything else. And the fact that they had an anxiety attack, they're like, God, I've never put it this way, but it's like they're proud that they have these ridiculous, retarded anxiety attacks. It's mind numbing that it goes on.
They're a human Coomer meme.
Yeah.
They're a human Coomer meme. It's a perfect meme too, to describe so much of so many young men in the in society. I mean, especially, you know, I got caught up in that a video game thing. You know, it's like PS1, PS2 and everything. And then it just got to a point where I was just like, this is insane. I cannot do this anymore. And I sold it all. And I have not had a video game unit since then. I mean, I canceled my cable TV in 2014 because I was just like, I can't do this anymore. You know, I have a TV now and I have an Amazon Fire Stick, but I probably watch more of like BET, if anybody knows what BETV is, and Cinema APK. You know, I don't want to pay for anything. I'm cheap as hell. So, you know, it's like,
is that like Cody?
Yeah, it's like Cody. So, you know, so that's what I do. And I hardly watch that. I mean, half the time, if I have the TV on, I'm on YouTube watching cooking shows. I'm looking for recipes, and I'm looking for anything about butchery. I love butchery. Oh man, I bought some butchery knives this year that I just have so much fun just buying huge friggin' cuts of meat and just going into the kitchen and just like,
that's awesome. I went down and visited Adam a few months ago, and we made a whole bunch of sausage. It was good times.
Oh man, yeah. You know what? My ex-wife just moved away from where she was living, and she found my recipes, from both sides of my family. So cool. Like the Spanish side of my family and the Eastern European side of my family. So I'm going to be having some fun over the next couple of months. I was looking at some of them, and I'm like, one of these recipes takes like 2 days. I'm like, these people had a lot of time on their hands and everything, but just being able to find, I mean, I remember when my mom died, that was all I wanted. I don't want anything else. I just wanted the recipes. So, yeah.
Food is important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's a real way to be able to carry on family. You know, mm-hmm. I'll give them to my nieces because I don't have kids, and I'm not going to have kids. So I'll give them to my nieces to make sure that they keep going.
That's great.
One of the best gifts I ever got was from my father's wife, actually, who hand wrote all. I mean, I have a binder full of recipes that she, you know, some of them she cut out and pasted, but most of them were all written by hand.
See, I love this conversation right now, but we're so polluted by politics. When you said she had a binder full, I thought of Mitt Romney talking about, remember Mitt Romney?
Binders full of women.
Politics just destroys everything. It's like, come on.
So true.
You just talk about food. We can talk about food for, I'd be happy. You know, so upsetting. Politics just sucks.
Yeah. Well, we've ended on a kind of up note here, Pete. Is there anything that we can look forward to in the next few years, or any words of advice besides getting out of the city and getting organized on as local a level as possible?
No, I really think that I think mutual aid, I think really you have to make a good, have a good network of people that you can rely upon if things get bad. You know, we saw in 2020 that, you know, things can disappear off the shelves very quickly. And if things get worse, if things get bad again, if inflation gets really bad, which, I mean, I don't see how it can't, there will be shortages. I think people should really be stocking up on non-perishables right now and just getting together with like-minded people. And, you know, so if somebody make friends with somebody who has a well. I mean, that's, if you don't have access to a well, make friends with somebody who has a well.
Yeah. If you get to Oregon or Washington, you can use one of ours. So.
Yeah. And we have plenty of them here in Alabama. The water lines aren't deep. Just rely on each other and remember the phrase, all politics is local. Concentrate as local as possible on your politics. And I really think that we can get by. I think we can get through this if we want to, and just stop buying into the insanity that is the 202 area code of Washington, D.C. It is there. The only way you're going to change that place, the only way that place is going to be changed, is if someone rises up who basically builds an army to himself and changes it, you know, and I don't know if that's possible. So, you know, we just got to hope that thing falls apart on its own. And it does look like it's weakening. I think there is evidence that it's weakening.
I'm hoping for a John Fetterman Bravo style reality
show. He needs to run for president in 2024. we need that. You know how they're saying that.
I think he could do it.
Even if Biden runs in 2024, he'll probably get rid of Kamala. He should take Fetterman. How would it be any different? It'd be
there might be more strokes, double the strokes.
Oh no, I don't wish. You know something? I feel bad for that
guy. Yeah,
I really feel bad for that guy because his wife is friggin' leading him around by the nose. I mean, doing a friggin' stroke version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah,
and, I really feel bad for that guy.
I'd hope if I had a stroke, my wife, Deborah's daughter, would say, "Hey, Adam, you know, maybe pull out of the race, you know, something like that."
I tell my girlfriend if I have a stroke or if I have something like that, just get me weed. Just keep me high all the time.
Just keep me high.
Yeah. Just keep me high and I'll be fine.
Kind of a goofy thing to bring up right here at the end, but there was that old South Park where one of them was comatose the whole episode. And as Will said, in the event that I'm in a coma, please. And it didn't finish. And then it became this big political war.
Yeah, it was the Terry Schiavo episode.
That's episode. Right. Yeah, it was all in the news. It was like that week that was going on too. It was a great moment in television or whatever.
And then when they finally figured out what the message was, it was like, don't put me
on television and make a political issue looking like this.
Yeah. Yeah. And looking like this, you know. Yeah. I remember that Terry Schiavo.
That was something else.
Well, Deborah,
politics destroys everything.
Final thoughts, questions, points. Thanks for being a good sport.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it.
You don't need to thank me. I'm here to learn. I just want to, you know, get my eyes a little more open, and you've contributed to that.
You cry in the shower ever?
Do I cry in the shower?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking to her.
Yeah, I bet you didn't hear anything tonight that you've heard on CNN or that you'll hear on CNN.
No, you're absolutely right about that.
And that's the real deal point of this podcast is to let you hear that there are other people out there who aren't Fox and they aren't CNN. And I think we did a great job of that tonight. Thank you, Pete.
Yes. Oh, I agree. Thank you.
Thank you for the invitation. I appreciate
it. Pete, this is fantastic and a ton of fun. We'd love to talk to you again sometime. And, anytime. Keep up the great work, man. You're my, the most consistent one from that genre that I still pay attention to. It's damn near 100%. And that most recent book you've been reading too, I've been looking for a copy, but that one's a little too much for Deborah probably, but that's a good one. So
I did write it down though.
I'll send you a PDF. I'll send you a PDF if you want.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
All right. Right on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Go ahead and plug away, Pete.
Yep. The Pete Quinones Show. All podcatchers for now. YouTube I'm on suspension at YouTube.
We just got nuked all the way. Everything gone.
Is it really?
Yeah. Oh, no, we did. Ours you is did? Gone. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I hadn't put anything up in like 3 months and I just went on one day and it was gone.
they hit me for two episodes recently where I even just mentioned that thing that happened in November, first Tuesday of November 2020. My Substack, PeteSubstack.com, and I myself and a bunch of other content creators have started something called the Old Glory Club, and we're on YouTube for now. It's the Old Glory Club. We have a Substack, Old Glory Club, and it's just basically a fraternity of us, and we're like, sure, some of us are talking about politics, but like my first episode for Old Glory Club was like the history of American guns, Yeah, I just got Lee Enfield from En Bloc Press to come on, and
yeah,
he just talked about his favorite American guns and talked about the history of American guns and what gun culture meant up to a certain point before it just really started getting attacked. And Old Glory Club, check us out, and
Peek cool.
and Yono Show. I promise I will try to teach you something new every episode.
Yeah. Right on, man. We really appreciate it. We'll let you get out of here. But thank you so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. See you guys. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I'm not doing this for you. I'm doing this for me. I'm not signed on to killing all those old people or those black babies. Fuck you, motherfucking New World Order. I will get your ass. Delay that. It pisses me off. You sign on to playing God, you get burned. And all you dumbasses that serve the New World Order are idiots. Playing God all day. Deciding who lives and who dies.
Penis man.
And then I find out they're all screwing little kids and devil worshiping. Of course they are. Oh, you're the big elites. Oprah Winfrey and Ted Turner and Bill Clinton and Epstein, all in that 7-story pervert building in New York. What a bunch of freaks. And the fact that those pedophiles, and I'm calling Oprah Winfrey one, hope she burns in hell. Every damn one of you's a piece of crap. And you're going to be judged. So you just continue to enjoy hurting babies and hurting old people and hurting homeless people and turn us all into a bunch of idiots. Because you will be destroyed.
Mom, I'm transgender.